Okay, next I'd like to introduce Reed Foreman. He is also with CSAT SAMHSA. He is the team leader for SAMHSA's ESPERT program. Reed has been working in the social service field for over 30 years, which makes him very old. He's been in state organizations, private for-profit, non-profit, federal government settings, both domestically and overseas. Prior to coming to SAMHSA, he worked for 16 years for the Department of Defense in their alcohol and drug programs, and then directed social service programs for their family service centers and personal service centers. Reed's going to talk to us about screening, brief intervention, referral to service, and how it can help you increase access to care. So, Reed?
Thank you. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and you brave souls, as Rita mentioned, that you're willing to stick in for the rest of this here. I'm going to talk about screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment, which is called ESPERT. And is everybody familiar with ESPERT to some degree? See a hand or two up there. Okay, oh, you can all leave. And those who don't can stay. No, all right, no, please stay. We're going to segue in from what Rita has to say. And I'd say the takeaway from Rita is 16 million people are coming on in 2014, and they're going to get ESPERT. I came on to ESPERT about 5 years ago, and I could say 5 years ago we were all going to wonder, geez, it's a great program. Is it going to last? Is this going to take off? Well, in 5 years, which is really a very short period of time, particularly I think we all know in the field of social service and behavioral health, we've got Medicare, Medicaid, and CPT codes to pay for ESPERT, maybe not pay enough. But they're available. Joint Commission is doing a study right now, which we hope to hear about very soon, about whether they're going to see screening and brief intervention for alcohol and other drugs and tobacco as being worthwhile to make critical screening elements for hospital associations. That will make a big difference in the presence of ESPERT in the behavioral health field. And, well, really, to top it all off, as Rita just mentioned, the Affordable Care Act has basically made ESPERT the methodology moving into the future for how we're going to address these huge numbers of people that are going to require some kind of attention for their alcohol and drug use, or alcohol and drug use. So to kind of move on from that, I have no relationships at all, nothing that would be of any interest to anybody, even myself. Basically, the situation is this. Currently, we have 24 million people who need either abuse or dependency treatment and who don't even get it. About 2.6 million of those people actually get something. 95% don't even recognize the need, and we're talking about people who rise to the diagnostic level of needing something at the abuse and dependence level. We're not even talking about the main target for ESPERT, and I'll get to that in a minute. Roughly, 2.5 million adults have co-occurring serious illnesses. However, only about a little over 10% receive any treatment for that at all, and 39% didn't receive any treatment for this. And I think what I want to sort of have people go away from this slide is that people are not really, even people who rise to the level of a diagnostic need for these kinds of things are not getting treatment, but they are coming for treatment. They're coming for treatment for lots of things, and they're coming to primary care for this kind of treatment. And they're flooding our primary care services and our emergency services for things that ostensibly don't look like they're alcohol and drug related, but in fact are. And behaviorally, if you look at them, they don't arise to that level of abuse or dependency, something you might see obviously, but yet drink at a level that predisposes them to having these problems that we see flooding into primary care, emergency care, mostly emergency care, trauma centers, costing lots of money, frequent flying, and using a very costly time and services in a section of our healthcare area that they shouldn't be there. They should be getting this care more appropriately from a different sector of the care system. At any rate, drug users will definitely use our emergency facilities and urgent care centers more. They're not getting substance abuse treatment, but they're certainly getting treatment for everything else that may ail them in our emergency rooms. We've had almost 2 million ED visits were associated with drug abuse, misuse, or abuse, and more than half or 50% of all the drug misuse and abuse ED visits over the last years involved an illicit drug, multiple illicit drugs, or in combination with pharmaceuticals, alcohol, or both. So it's just a big mix out there. They're using everything and anything, and the mix is in there, and alcohol is definitely part of the mix. So the challenge here is if they're flooding our primary care and they're flooding our ED services, this is the location, or this is the nexus, I suppose, in healthcare and behavioral healthcare, which are soon to be married, we can just call it healthcare, where we're going to have the biggest impact on this population to move them back toward a more appropriate level of cost and care. So just to push the point even further, as I said, they are flooding our health centers, not our behavioral health centers, mental health centers, but they are flooding our health centers like FQHCs with conditions that need to be seen that are directly related back to substance use. And so the increase since 2001 has been almost 50%. This just shows you out about 7.5 million adults, at least 1.7 million are being seen in primary care for their substance abuse and mental health issues, or the substance abuse treatment for this slide, and it's in emergency rooms, private doctor's offices, and hospitals. 17 million adults who are seen for outpatient mental health treatment, and you can see the top two, that's a good, getting close to a good third of these patients are getting their care in outpatient medical clinics or a doctor's office, not in a clinic setting. So again, this just emphasizes the point. If you're in the primary care business or the emergency care business, you're seeing these folks. They're there. I don't know how, you know, we've been doing this work for some time, and the primary care world has a wide degree of comfort in dealing with these issues from zero to a lot. But there's a lot of concern about the capacity and the ability of primary care to handle these clients. So as Rita has mentioned, they're coming, and we're going to have to make some adjustments to how we handle these individuals in our regularly standard primary care settings. Just to sort of quote it, primary care, the setting that offers the healthcare system access to the most people, and behavioral health is an area in which the most impact on morbidity and mortality can be achieved. Again, that's going to be the challenge, and that's that we're not going to dodge this bullet. It's coming, obviously, as we've seen from Rita's talk. And I think everybody's probably heard the phrase before that primary care has become the de facto behavioral health care system in existence now, at this point in time. So this is going to take a bit of a conceptual or a paradigm shift on how we deal with these individuals. When we talk about marrying behavioral health back into primary care, particularly we talk about substance abuse, most of our concept of substance abuse has always been the very sick, very end stage, very obvious, or you would think would be obvious, individual who shows alcohol dependency that essentially nobody can miss these signs. And when we've talked about substance abuse treatment in the past, this is where not only most of our attention has gone, but most of our funding has gone and most of our care has gone. We have given very little attention to those individuals, as I mentioned earlier, who can show up in a primary care setting or an emergency care setting, who don't rise to this level of addiction or abuse, but yet use drugs in such a fashion that it contributes to their reasons for coming for care, but don't obviously look like they need any attention paid to their substance use consumption. So from an expert standpoint, doing screening and brief intervention and referral to treatment, primary moment or the critical moment that we can make an impact on individuals who are overusing drugs and alcohol is what we call the teachable moment. And this teachable moment is basically based on the relationship a person seeking care has with somebody in a white coat. We put a lot of respect and we put a lot of power into the hands of physicians particularly, but also allied healthcare professionals. So when individuals find themselves going to emergency rooms or trauma centers or primary care centers with a physical problem and want attention, they are in a psychological state where they are prepared to listen and take action on advice that's being given to them by people they recognize as being authorities in their health care, which is typically the physicians or, again, nurses or other allied health professionals. And in screening and brief intervention, the brief intervention aspect of this capitalizes on this relationship between the individual seeking care and the physician or the nurse or the social worker or the physician's assistant who are seen as being in a position of authority and to such a degree that patients will listen to what they're advised to do. And that's the brief intervention part. That's probably the beauty in an alcohol and somewhat the drug brief intervention aspect. This teachable moment is our ability to impact people who are still cognitively capable of making good decisions, quick decisions based on simple advice to change their behavior. These are not in-stage individuals who can no longer benefit from simple brief advice and discussions. We're talking about individuals who are using it to a lesser degree or a risky or a moderate degree, who are still capable of making good decisions if they're given good advice. So probably everybody's seen the drinker's pyramid. It's been making the rounds for years now. And so this just reflects back on what I was saying earlier. 40% of the people in our population don't drink at all. They're abstainers. About 35% drink at low risk. They need no intervention whatsoever. If they screen negative, you say, good job, keep it up. That's all they need. 20% are these individuals who are asymptomatic. They don't rise to the level of a diagnosis. But in fact, but by sheer numbers, their risky use of alcohol above the NIAAA standard limits, and I'm sure, but does everybody know what a standard drink is? Good, it's a 12-ounce beer, or it's 1 4-5-ounce glass of wine, or it's a shot and a half of hard liquor. I won't remember the other. 3 per day for men and 2 per day for women, and no more than 14 a week for men and no more than 7 a week for women, and that's the NIAAA limit. So it's when we give this talk at colleges, they all kind of look at us blankly and go, are you kidding? That's lunch. But I digress, right? So again, you look at the top of the pyramid, and we're talking about people who are very sick, very ill, who are our classic group that we have paid almost all of our attention to when we have focused on alcohol and drug treatment in the past. We don't want to focus on those. We will have a place to send them. And Mr. Singleton will be talking about some of the places we can send these individuals when we discover them in primary care and emergency settings. And if you do, Espert, you will find them. You will definitely find them. We've screened over 1.2 million people in the 7 years that this program has been going on. And consistently, about 3% of the people we screen rise to the level of a need for referral to specialty treatment, traditional specialty treatment. About 3% rise to the level of needing what we call brief treatment, or would be in the what we would have called the abuse category previously. So about 6% rise to the level of needing care beyond what primary care providers can give. We're interested in that red block of 20%, that asymptomatic individual who is using a little too much. This is contributing to things like accidents, disease processes, injuries of some kind, things that bring them. What we find is if people who drink between risky and abusive, they don't tend to go to their doctor either. They tend to wait until something happens, and they're rushing to the emergency room. Not that all of us might not have had that opportunity in the past ourselves, but at any rate, these individuals in that 20% category are those individuals who, by sheer numbers, are a huge drain on our primary care and emergency services, because that is where they tend to go and get their treatment. Brief intervention with these individuals when they are screened for that level show that they do in fact reverse this trend, go back to their primary care physicians, get more appropriate and less costly care, and save the system a lot of money. This just says, I won't read the slide, but basically the rule of thumb is this. Over the 7 years we've been doing this, and our own grantees have sort of shown this to be true too, that for every primary care system that is willing to spend $1 in doing Espert, they save about $4 in the long run. This is upfront money, and of course everybody says, well, you know, what did you do for me lately? Or what did you save me today? I don't want to hear about 2 or 3 years down the road. But at any rate, here's the argument. This will save them money. In fact, here in the state of Colorado, I think they have a clinic in Vail, and they've saved $1.8 million over the last 3 years of operations. So they're very happy with it, and there is cost savings to be had. again, this goes. This just talks again that emergency centers, community health centers, healthcare clinics, and trauma centers see these asymptomatic individuals and individuals who don't perceive a need for treatment or intervention. But when you do intervene and you do screen, you do ask, and you have a brief intervention, you move them back into appropriate services. and so, again, as Rita has said, the flood is coming. You know, 5 years ago, we might have said, well, this is just a good thing to do because it's going to save money. But 16 more million people are going to be covered in 2014, and they are going to be seeking Espert, because now Espert, as a B-level preventive task force recommended service, is going to be covered. So they're going to come, they're going to need this service as we move forward. So we need a well-trained primary care provider population. They need to know what to do with these folks. And it's fairly simple. And Espert, because Espert has this impact of moving appropriate clients back to more appropriate and less costly treatment, it's going to be a major focus or a major thrust of moving into the future with healthcare reform. Given the fact that we're SAMHSA and we give out money to the states, we tend to give out money mostly to those states who can prove that they have the greatest need or social need or underserved populations that can really benefit from this and who have not been served in the past. And this is a breakdown of our reported ethnic categories that we've seen over the past 7 years. And you can see about 50.1% is considered white or Caucasian, and about half the population that is served through the ESPRT program has been other than white. For the age groups, we really run fairly well across the board. We don't see a lot in the adolescent section of society. However, there are screening tools that are appropriate for screening adolescents in school settings or other settings like that. So, but we have seen primarily the adult to the elderly population. And it breaks down reasonably evenly across the board. Don't have to say too much about this. Alcohol, marijuana, cocaine, number 1, 2, and 3. I haven't seen much of a change in that list in 30 years. With alcohol being far and above the substance most widely used and abused, whether from a risky level to a dependency level. So alcohol is still the prime player in substance misuse and abuse. when we looked at, how well have we done screening this 1.2 million individuals over time, half of which were listing themselves as a underserved population or a minority population. These are the outcomes that we've gotten. Now, the outcomes come from our Government Performance Results Act. We require everybody to tell us what they did. I like to say, if you take Uncle Sam's dollar, you got to tell Uncle Sam what you did with it. So we've reported increases in those individuals who reported abstinence up by 171%. An increase of 14% for those saying they were employed. Housing stability has increased by 6%, and those who have had no arrests has risen during the time period have risen by 10%. Minority clients who have experienced serious depression after an ESPRT intervention, they would claim we have 6-month follow-up is what we do. We do a GIPR interview, which is a series of questions at the intake, and then 6 months later we do a follow-up. So, and this is self-report. This is what becomes reported by the individual when we can contact them. And we've seen reported reductions in depression, anxiety, hallucinations, concentration issues, controlling violent behavior, and reductions in attempted suicide. Reductions in attempted injection drug use, reduction in unprotected sexual contact, and those with HIV positive partners. Reductions in unprotected sexual contact with IV drug users or with other high-risk individuals. Rita's already talked about that. We're a B-level preventive task force. It means we're gonna get paid for. Lots of folks worked very hard on getting Medicaid code adoption. Well, that's going to become it in 2014. Here's a list of states that have already implemented the Medicaid codes. Medicare, of course, is universal. It's everywhere. Medicare is already in there. So, as I said, we have to prepare our primary care physician force as we move into the future with ESPRT. Because what we find is we have a lack of training. Traditionally, the primary care field has not wanted to deal with these individuals, mostly, again, because of the focus on those who are addicted and the problems and the intractability of that issue. So we have to train individuals, and we're training medical residents. We have 17 medical residency grants now where we are training the new generation of residents to go forth with some experience in ESPRT so that we reduce the fear of dealing with this kind of individual, the fear of angering patients when you bring up their alcohol and drug use or smoking, for that matter, we're going to be looking at that. Concepts that you can't make an impact on alcohol and drug abuse because they're all addicted and I can't help them. Well, we're not looking at the addicted individuals anymore. We're looking at those who can really benefit from a quick discussion of their mild use of alcohol and drugs. And it's hard to kind of beat physicians when they say they don't have the time. That's a tough issue to talk about, but that's why also allied health professionals can also do ESPRT, but this is going to take some training. Then again, we have 17 medical residency grants where we're training the next cadre of physicians. And within that program, we also realize that we need to bring in nursing schools, we need to bring in social work schools, we need to bring in all sorts of individuals who are allied health professionals, because they're really the ones who are going to end up being doing this, particularly in large healthcare systems. These are going to be duties that are probably going to fall to these folks. We've trained over 500 residents so far. We've trained 1,500 or almost 1,600 non-residents. Internal medicine seems to be the residents that we target the most. They seem to form the biggest cadre of residents that get this training. And you can see we train others, psychiatry, pediatrics, family medicine, emergency medicine. And here's where we're training them. This is the 17 sites, sort of located mostly in the East and the West Coast, with a little bit in Texas, Missouri, and Illinois, and Indiana fall in the Midwest here. And okay. Esbert, all I can say in the future is the future looks good. We are, from our 09 appropriations, we were proposed to get, we got a small uptick in 2010. The president's budget proposes to do a significant increase. The House, at least so far, has agreed with that large increase. The Senate does not agree with that large increase. They're looking more like a $7 million increase, but it's all increases. We're not hearing them talk about reductions, so we are moving along, and hopefully we will do another round. Our goal is to continue with the program and to prepare for healthcare reform. Codes are in place. We need to assess how our appropriate our healthcare providers can treat these individuals appropriately, overcome their barriers. And one of the biggest barriers is going to be, where do I send people who are really sick when I find them in my primary care practice? And I'm going to hand that one over to Bert, and we'll go from there. Thank you.
Thank you.